Welcome to From the Balls, where I, Katie Ball, speak to today's trailblazers. Young female entrepreneurship is on the rise. 2 years ago, 17,500 businesses were founded by women aged 16 to 25, which is a staggering 22 times greater than in 2018. Now, 20% of all businesses across the UK are all female-led. And they've got all the industries covered, from neuroscience consultants to luxury hair and beauty products to ethical dairy farmers and spin class instructors. Yet, when it comes to investment, women consistently underperform their male counterparts. Why? And should more be done to support female entrepreneurs? Joining me now to shine a light on some of these issues is Annalise Dodds, the Shadow Secretary of State for Women and Equalities and Chair of the Labour Party, Jo Overton, the Managing Director for Customer Propositions and Strategy for Business Commercial Banking at Lloyds Banking Group, and Ekki Newton, the co-founder of Karma Cans, an office lunch delivery company, and Karma Kitchen that provides commercial kitchen spaces to food businesses. Welcome all. To begin, Jo, if I could just start with you. For those listening on the podcast, how do we understand the benefits to the economy that we get from entrepreneurs in the first place?
So small businesses and entrepreneurs are absolutely the lifeblood of our economy. There's just under 6 million businesses of that size in the UK. And the amount of innovation that they drive is absolutely phenomenal. You can hear that from some of the examples you just gave there, Katie, of some of the innovative industries that they're part of. And we know that whatever industry that is, that it's a really important part of creating jobs within the UK and making sure that we've got that across all of our regions.
And Annalise, in your brief, you've been looking a lot at female entrepreneurs. What are some, I suppose, before we get to some of the good news and solutions, what are some of the obstacles that using kind of female-led businesses or female entrepreneurs potentially are facing when it comes to the general outlook?
Well, I want to say, first of all, that I really have met some incredible female entrepreneurs over the years. I mean, amazing women who've developed fantastic products, whether that's goods or services, who've built really successful businesses, employing lots of other people. And, you know, we really need to be unlocking that potential. But yeah, I suppose you asked about the barriers, and I think we can see them reflected in the fact that we haven't seen an increase in the proportion of entrepreneurs overall, so number of women-led businesses, over the last 10 years. So there's been quite a slow change there. And I think that indicates there are some barriers still that are in the way. I know that we're going to be talking about some of them today, which will be brilliant, as barriers around access to finance, all of the issues that more broadly impact on women in work as well, around childcare, issues around flexibility, for example. And if we're looking at different parts of the life course, we can also see, again, the general issues that are impacting women. NHS waiting lists, for example, gynecology waiting lists, I'm afraid the worst in the NHS, those kinds of issues, menopause and so forth, where, you know, for every woman, they will be different, but they can have an impact on the ability to set up your own business. And as I say, we've got to be unlocking that potential. It's so important.
And Jo, those are the kind of challenges you've seen.
Yeah, definitely. I think access to finance is one that we just heard about there. I think in some of the surveys that we've done, we found that 40% of women feel that that's a barrier in them progressing and scaling their business, which is a huge number. And from the conversations we've had, we know that over 85% of people have also said that they don't really understand the finance options available to them. So I'm sure we'll come on to discuss some of the challenges of accessing that finance in the conversation today. But even that kind of point that people don't feel clear on the options available to them, there's so much work we can do just to raise awareness and to work across the whole industry to make sure that people can scale their businesses more successfully.
Jo, as we get going on this podcast, I think it's fair to say some of the lingo used in entrepreneur world might be lost on some of our listeners or those beginning their journey. So can you just talk us roughly through the types of funding someone might be looking for when they're looking to start or grow their business?
Yeah, of course. So it really does depend on the stage your business is at. But in the very early days, it's really worthwhile looking at things like grants that are available because they can be a really good source of funding in the early days and don't require any other business take equity often in your business. It means you stay in full control. Other options that you have as you start to grow your business, so you could consider venture capital. So this tends to be for businesses that are kind of, you know, in those early stages looking to scale up, but that does tend to involve them taking a stake in your business and having a little bit more involvement and control. And then as you get into kind of larger scaling up, private equity becomes more of an option too, which is really when you get, you know, larger scale businesses. Alongside that, once you get your business into profitability, you can also look at more kind of traditional bank lending, which is often described as debt. And so there's a number of options that are available. There's also a couple of other things you can consider. So angel investors can be a really good option earlier on in your cycle. That's where you get either individuals or groups who are willing to invest in particular businesses, often at an earlier stage. And there's often also family groups who are wealthy individuals who might invest as well. So that often comes up in that kind of scale up phase or in larger, more mature businesses. But it is another option which can be considered and is quite valuable to some people as they're on their business journey.
And at this point, I will now bring in our female entrepreneur, Ekki. Ekki, I suppose first off, for listeners, can you explain what your entrepreneurial pursuits are and then how you first kind of found the path you're on?
Sure thing. So Karma Cans is a corporate catering company. Me and my sister founded it in 2014, so it's now about to hit its 10th birthday in May, which is very exciting. That company, we make about 2,500 meals a day for offices all around London. And about 4 years in or 5 years in, we were trying to find kitchen space and really struggling. We're a revenue-driven business. We've never taken on outside investment for that business. So we were just spending the money that we were making, and we just could not find kitchen space at all in the market. And we decided, okay, this is an issue not just for us. Let's build kitchen space for other businesses, and I'm sure other businesses will need this too, other food businesses. And we were right. Many businesses did come to us and ask if they could rent originally our Karma Cans unit, and we decided to expand that offering out into a second business, Karma Kitchen. Karma Kitchen is a little bit different to Karma Cans. We buy light industrial real estate and then convert it into kitchen space, multi-occupancy kitchens. So we have 6 live sites, each with about 40 or 50 kitchens in them and 2 under construction at the moment. Quite a different economic model to Karma Cans. Definitely not possible to build a business like that with just the revenue that you're making. Even the initial site was hundreds of thousands of pounds. So for that business, we had to go out and raise money. And that journey was like definitely an interesting one.
And I suppose, how did you initially know where to go about it?
We have
it's
no
not
idea.
Really, it's not really at school you're taught this is how to be an entrepreneur.
I think that's exactly right. I'm pretty sure there might be some schools that would teach you that, but definitely not all schools. I think that we didn't know anything about fundraising when we started Karma Kitchen. And we initially, we spent almost a year, I think, trying to figure out how to get money and how to raise money and what was required to raise money. The first round we closed, it was just tiny. It was £300,000, which is just about enough to build one tiny site, not enough to scale a business. The next round we raised, we again went out back to market trying to raise from venture capital firms. And that took over a year and we were getting absolutely nowhere. And again, not understanding where the money would come from and how funding works in the wider market, not really understanding and having a deep knowledge of how those markets operated, meant that it just took us a really long time to find the right investors for us. As soon as we found the right kind of investors for us, then we started making a lot more progress. So in our second round, we went out to raise £3 million and we ended up closing a fund of £250 million in a completely different structure to the traditional VC route. And I think that took a long time for us to understand because no one was there to kind of support the journey.
Annalise, I wondered what you kind of make of that, because also Labour's recently announced its own plans to boost female entrepreneurs by adjusting the British Business Bank scheme, which is addressing some of this, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was so interesting from Ekki. I mean, that issue about how women find out about these opportunities and then can really make use of them is one that I've had raised with me, you know, many different times. And what you just said, Katie, about the British Business Bank, I think is important because they do set that overall framework. Obviously, they fund many businesses when they're starting out, provide a lot of advice and support. And we think that the British Business Bank could work with government. And, you know, I know there are people in the bank who really want to be doing this, but work with government to be backing more women entrepreneurs and also backing more ethnic minority founders as well. And in fact, where there's the biggest challenge, I would say, a lot of the time is for Black women, where you've got really low levels of funding a lot of the time for their businesses. We think we could work with the bank if we were given that chance to serve in government, for example, by developing new key performance indicators for the bank, including the overall investment allocation towards women founders and the diversity of applications that are considered overall. We think that would start to make a difference. And that came out of the scale-up startup review that Rachel Reeves commissioned and really thinking about, well, what could we do to shift the dial? I think the other aspect of this as well is based on something really interesting that Eki said, I thought, which was about what happens at school. And, you know, of course, the image for a lot of people of what a business person looks like is not a young woman or indeed an older woman. You know, it's a kind of bloke in pinstripe suit, probably quite old fashioned. And what we can do together to kind of challenge those stereotypes and build up that understanding, I think, is really important. I know that Bridget Phillipson for Labour, leading for us on education, has been thinking about those kind of issues, you know, how we can kind of challenge some of those stereotypes and make sure that girls and young women actually get the information advice that they need and decent careers advice as well.
And Joe, do you agree with that? Because I want to talk about the funding gap, but there's also the ego gap. Female-founded businesses are often underrepresented across business awards, less than half the number of men, which can suggest almost a lack of confidence or perhaps less likely to put themselves forward, you know, in that way.
Yeah, no, I think we definitely see that there are lots of scenarios where women feel less confident, whether that's in the early stages of starting up their businesses, or if it's like later in the stage where they're having to go out there and search for funding in the way that Eki described. Another thing that we definitely would see as well is that intersection between different demographics where we really see the impacts of some of these challenges compounding. So kind of ethnic minorities and women is one example, but also disabled entrepreneurs. So disability obviously takes lots of different guises, but I think we really see that there's a massive kind of interdependence between those issues. And back to kind of how all these things come together, some of the challenges that lead people to kind of get into entrepreneurship in the first place are sometimes due to some of these kind of broader societal kind of realities. So people wanting more flexibility in the way that they construct their working life and independence that being an entrepreneur can provide. So I think we really see that playing out in slightly different ways for some of those groups. But some of the work we've done with our Black Entrepreneurship Programme has definitely highlighted the importance of bringing these things together.
And Eki, when I mentioned that funding gap, I mean, women-led businesses secured 3.5% of equity funding being invested in UK businesses during the first half of 2023, which isn't the most encouraging stat I've
ever
read.
It's not encouraging, is it? It's just not encouraging. I think there's a lot of different issues going on there. I mean, the first one is that for major LPs and partners at venture capital firms and partners at banks, there just isn't the kind of representation in the people handing out the money that you need. So if you want to bring more women in, and, you know, more of anyone different in, you need to have that representation at the highest level. The people who give funding to the funders need to also be as diverse as possible. And if we can start making those changes, then that will be helpful. I also think that so much of the time people say, women lack confidence, or things that women do in pitch meetings, you know, they're just not as good at pitching as men. And I just completely disagree with that. It's not the women's fault. Yeah, it's I think that women just don't get the benefit of the doubt. You know, they have to undergo much higher levels of due diligence. They are pushed harder on their numbers. They're expected to answer questions more thoroughly. God forbid you make a mistake on your numbers or this tiny part of your presentation, because that will be a mark against you. So I think if we look at how, now I wouldn't want to reintroduce this across the board for women, because I don't think it's been very helpful for the wider world, but the idea of the old boys club, you know, there's something very powerful in that idea. And it has been a really powerful tool for men's success. And I think that women need to leverage some of that energy to come together and work together a little bit and give each other the benefit of the doubt when they see another woman on the horizon coming up.
Not quite suggesting an all-female Garrick.
Definitely not suggesting that.
Instead of those female networks actually empowering one another.
Female networks and just working with women and giving other women a bit of the benefit of the doubt that as they come up and ask for money, ask for funding.
I think I definitely agree with that. I think that we see some real fantastic organisations emerging in this space. So we work with a number of them, including Female Founders Rise, who are building a brilliant community, which is all about that. It's about, you know, bringing strength together in all of, you know, a cohort of different types of entrepreneurs coming together. And I think we've really, really seen the kind of energy that that can create. And I guess the way that people encourage and support people and almost creating networks to give people access to those, you know, whether it's funders or whether it's, you know, people who can mentor them or support them in their business journey. I think it's really important.
Definitely, but also the question is that do these networks come with financial backing? Because often female-led VCs, it can't just be female-led VCs or female-led fund or female-led networks. It has to be an opening up of the male-led spaces, the ones which actually have the money behind them. They are the ones that have to diversify it, because many of the female-led VCs and female-founded funds are just way too small to finance these like large-scale, like for example, biotech. They couldn't just finance biotech because some of the funds are only like £60 million in size or something like that. It's not enough.
Annalise, what do you say to Eki's point, the fact that, you know, you need women in senior roles across the board, which I know is something you've spoken about previously, but I suppose what role can a political party or potential government in waiting do to assist that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is such an interesting point, and I had the privilege of being at a round table earlier in the week with the Federation of Small Business, and they had some quite senior women from some of the different commercial banks there. And I thought that was just so interesting because they were so switched on to this agenda and, you know, very different, frankly, to if we were having this conversation 10 or 20 years ago, where you probably wouldn't have had women at that level of seniority. You know, obviously it's taken a heck of a long time, but, you know, that they were really kind of pushing for change in this area. It's very encouraging indeed. And so I think, you know, I agree with what the others have said. You know, clearly this can't be just something that us women have got to sort out on our own. You know, the systems themselves have got to change, but it does then help when you've got those champions, but also when you've got role models. And again, this is something that I've heard quite a lot, that, you know, if you can't imagine yourself as an entrepreneur, then, you know, it's just going to be so difficult to take those steps. And also, if people say that you can't do it. I mean, in fact, I was thinking about this in relation to women in science and technology recently. One of my colleagues, Kieran Wura, who was an engineer, she said when she was growing up that she didn't know anyone who was a woman and an engineer. So there was nobody she could point to. So when people said, well, you can't be an engineer because you're a little girl, she couldn't say, well, actually, there is that woman who's doing that job. And so I think where we can showcase, you know, that female entrepreneurship is incredibly important, really. So I've always been very keen to do that as a kind of inverted commas politician, really, to say, look, here's some brilliant examples of women entrepreneurs. And this really is an option that you can make a living by, that's really exciting, and that's really good fun as well.
I just had one point to build on, if that's okay. I think a really interesting point there, and I definitely agree that role models and visible role models is so important. And one of the things that came out of the recent Women-Led High Growth Task Force was the Lifted Project, which has recently been announced. And that's setting up in 5 cities boards that are going to be focused on supporting cohorts of women in that scenario. And one of their explicit objectives that we're supporting is to really increase the focus and double the number of visible role models in those locations. Because I think it's so important that we've got those at a national scale and people that are very visible, but also thinking about in local kind of regional areas, how can we also create local role models who can help build those networks across the UK? Because we often see such dominance of kind of business in London and the Southeast. And of course, we want women to succeed everywhere in their businesses and more broadly. But I do think if we can create those networks across the country, it just gives us even more chance to create success for people.
I wonder, Eki, just is there anything you think the government could do that is particularly also industry which would make the biggest difference in terms of female entrepreneurs?
What could the government do?
Do you know, because we've had the Rose Report, for example, which is, you know, talking about how you can get more female-led businesses.
I actually contributed, I think it's the High Growth Women-Led Task Force. I think Anne Bowden was running it, and I contributed to that. And I totally agree with her that having more female role models is incredible and it's really powerful. I mean, what has been really effective in other industries is publishing for companies with more than 250 employees, I think, publishing their gender pay gap. I mean, that has had a massive impact on the gender pay split, basically. And it's actually at the highest level that the gender pay gap exists in its most extreme forms. So if a government could potentially bring something like that, bring more light on the way that funding was distributed around the economy, I don't know if there's something that, something to basically shine a light on.
So there's more transparency.
Yeah, so there's more transparency, exactly, to push those LPs to diversify more quickly.
So Annalise, first I'm going to put you on the spot. What do you think about that idea? And also, I mentioned the Rose Review. It found that up to $250 billion of new value could be added to the UK economy if women started and scaled new business at the same rate as UK men. I know you've spoken a lot about your view that getting more women to the workforce will boost the economy. So what do you think are the best ways that a Labour government, if there is going to be one at the end of the year, obviously not being complacent?
Yeah, well, I mean, they're both incredibly important questions, I think, Katie, and I'm so pleased that Eki and I are probably on a very similar page, actually. I think it is important that we consider these issues within the overall context of that gender pay gap. And that we've commissioned Baroness Frances O'Grady, who's an incredible trailblazer. Of course, she was the first ever woman leader of the Trade Union Congress. She's been working on a review for my party, so working with me and also with Rachel Reeves, the Shadow Chancellor, and Angela Rayner, who's our deputy leader, working with all of us to look at how we can get that gender pay gap down. And you know, rather than what would quite often happen, which would be to only look at women in kind of, you know, standard employment, we are also thinking about these issues related to self-employed women and women entrepreneurs as well. Because of course, all of this feeds into a pattern where, unfortunately, women's incomes are just so much lower than men's. And I have to say, part of this picture also is where, in some cases, self-employment may not be actually the best place for women to be. If we're talking about very low value self-employment, where they're not able to access flexible employment. But anyway, that's a slightly separate issue. But I think Eki really is right to say we've got to consider this as part of the overall gender pay gap, and, you know, trying to have greater information really about this, and that kind of focus on the British Business Bank, we think could catalyse, you know, that greater information available about when support is going to female founders and when it isn't. But, you know, we think there are other measures as well, because, you know, women's entrepreneurship is going to be impacted by all the other pressures that affect women. I mean, we've talked about some of these issues before, Katie, I think, on your podcast, but, you know, obviously pressures from childcare, pressures from social care as well. You know, quite often it'll be women in their 50s who would have their expertise from the workplace who are starting to think, right, actually, I could set up my own business, but they can't because of the pressures of looking after kids or grandkids or a partner, and they can't get the right care in, or indeed some of those health issues as well. So I think this all is part of that solution, which, you know, for me, the big question is not whether we should do this, but how can we afford not to do it? Because we're leaving all that talent and expertise and brilliance on the table.
And then, Jared, I wonder, just going back to what we were talking about earlier about the funding gap, quite mortifying figure of 3.5% of equity funding. Why do you think that is? And are there any kind of, I don't know, rays of light that things might be improving a bit? And then also, what role can, we're talking about what politicians can do, what role can industry do, I think, when it comes to, you know, supporting their clients so they feel they can take some of these risks? And if it does go a bit wrong, or you have some of the turbulence Eki was talking about, you know, not everything is on the line, which if you are a woman, everyone too, but, you know, and you've got these commitments, perhaps a family, you're going to be particularly cautious about.
We definitely kind of want to be there with our customers, as an example, and I know this is true of many banks across the industry, and really help them through when sometimes it's not the right time for banks actually to be the main funding partner. It depends on what stage of maturity the business is at. And that's why we think it's really important to work across the industry with a variety of partners, whether it's venture capital or whether it's thinking about angel investment or whatever it might be. There's so many options available to entrepreneurs. And so I think a massive part of the story is helping people navigate that landscape and I guess having conversations across the industry to make sure that everyone is playing their part in thinking about what we can do here. A really good example is thinking about the community development institutions. They are a really good example of organisations that are really out there in the communities supporting those from often less represented groups. And so we recently put an investment into one of those, £43 million. And so that's a really different way that we can play our part in making sure that funding's reaching different parts of the entrepreneurial community. So lots of different ways I think that banks can play their part. And I say that for anyone who's out there who's nervous or worried, I think talk to those around you, whether it's your bank or others that you trust, because the more you can access that support network, there's often fears that can be allayed if you engage in those kind of conversations, which I think can really give people that that confidence, and that motivation to take that next step. And they'll be there to help you if things don't go to plan.
And now I'm going to go around the panel. And basically, what practical advice or tips would you offer those wanting or thinking about starting their own business that are perhaps a little bit unsure? And we have part inspired, but part scared with this podcast. So I'm going to start with you, Annalise, then go to Eki, then go to Joe.
Oh, goodness. Well, that's a very good question. And I'm probably not the best person to answer it because I haven't set up my own business, but very inspired by Eki's example and also reassured by what Joe said as well about support too. I mean, I come from a small business background. My dad was a small businessman. I suppose what I learned from that was that, you know, not every business idea is going to take off. You know, there are going to be some that will work, there will be some that won't work, but, you know, have that confidence in yourself, because certainly with my dad, you know, he set up a number of different businesses, some of them, you know, arguably a bit ahead of their time. I mean, I don't know whether the world was quite ready for his attempt to have a kind of import-export wine kind of thing going on in Northeast Scotland back in the 1970s. That didn't really take off.
Now it would be very popular.
I think, yeah, the kind of evidence from that really, and the amazing women that I've met who have moved into this area is, you know, it really is an option. You know, get the good advice that's available from, you know, the kind of people that Joe and Eki have been talking about. But, you know, if at first you don't succeed, then try again. I think, you know, that's really the message that I would send. And we need you, because we need your entrepreneurialism, women. We can't afford to be not actually making use of that.
On the whole, we see great performance from businesses that are led by women. And I think that the first thing I would say is give yourself the benefit of the doubt. You know, we're asking other people to give you the benefit of the doubt, but start with yourself. I think that having that confidence in yourself is, even if you don't initially have it, just give it a go and see how it goes. And I will also decide if you want to raise money, if you want to, what kind of business you want. Do you want a business that is like Karma Cans, where it's, you know, revenue driven, you're in full control of your journey? Or do you want to go and scale the business? And both give you, both are a great outcome, and both can be really rewarding in different ways. And I think once you've decided if you want to raise money or not, think very carefully about the kind of money that you're looking for. Do you want debt? If your business is profitable, then you can obviously look at raising debt. Do you want venture capital money? Do you want private equity money? Do you want another kind of a grant, for example? Knowing the answers to that would have probably saved us quite a bit of time and effort. So I think that would be one thing that I learned, and I think I would suggest for other people.
I just think it's so important that the businesses that we have in our country represent the consumers who are out there, the population, and you know, and that's so important that we encourage people to kind of take that chance. And I think the more that we can help people access networks early, so that you can, whether it's the financial advice that you just mentioned there, Eki, or whether it's you know, broader context in the industry about how you can build and be a part of a supply chain, I think there's so much value in accessing that upfront. So I guess I would encourage people to look around them, what's in their local area, what might they be able to access online from a broader perspective that can give them that insight early, so that they can have the greatest chance of building a successful business.
And with that, thank you, Joe. Thank you, Eki. Thank you, Annalise, for joining me today.